Hello, everyone. I'm Charles Laughlin, host of the Big 5D podcast. Welcome, and welcome our guest today, John Kitenge. John, how are you?
Good in yourself, Charles.
Awesome. Thank you. So, you are the founder, CEO of a company called Fractional.dev. If I pronounce anything wrong at any point, just correct me. It's all right. Tell us first. Okay. Tell us about you. Who are you? Where are you from? You know, what is your background? What is your skill set? And then we'll talk about what Fractional is and kind of the space it fills.
Okay. My name's John Kitenge. I run a company called Fractional. Fractional, I guess, is a company that kind of spun off from Param Solutions, which initially was my, I guess, maybe second, third business. It's a software development company that builds applications for startups and corporates. Fractional kind of got started to answer a different need, which was, I guess, alternative kind of workforce for other dev houses initially, but now it's also for just other startups, specifically in the IT space. So if I had to sum up what Fractional is, it's a platform, well, I guess we technology first now, but it's a platform that helps organizations get access to on-demand IT engineers for short to medium-term projects. So if you need, let's say, a senior developer for 3 months, 6 months, we'd be able to assist.
Okay. That makes sense. We'll get more into that in a moment. You said it's your second or third, or Param was your second. I forget what you just said.
Yeah.
But what you did say is that you've done multiple. I'm sorry, John, I've known you a little while, but I don't know. I normally don't ask people's age, but you're a young guy. You're, well, how old?
I'm 22.
Okay. So you're into like multiple startups at the age of 22. Talk about your first business. I don't care if it was a lemonade stand or that's an Americanism, but just tell us about your first business.
Jeez. The first business, we were trying to build out a, I don't know, Howler meets Instagram. So that's kind of what we were trying to do. We were trying to build a ticketing platform with more of a social feature. And I guess this was in high school. So I guess we thought we were going to just have an idea and then just walk in the front door of VCs and they'll just fund us. And it didn't actually work out that way. So I guess that kind of led us into more kind of consulting. And this was really just a friend's dad said, hey, you guys know how to code, so why don't you actually sell your services so that you can actually generate enough money so that you can actually use that to fund the startup idea, because you're not going to get any money without any traction. So we did that, and I guess in the end of our matric year, or I don't know what the U.S. equivalent of that, but I think Africa, a lot of people in South Africa will understand. In the end of our senior year of high school, we made something like 50,000, and already we were pretty demotivated to go to varsity. And at that stage, I had probably gotten like 7 rugby scholarships to go to, I guess, different universities, and essentially turned that down. I might have been in varsity for a week or less, but for me, it just didn't make sense because I'd have to, I guess, balance between rugby, academics, and business. And all I know and all I wanted was just to be in business. So for me, I guess a lot of other people would have said it was a risk, but I didn't really see it as that. It just made sense. Because I was like, I just calculated if I did this whole business thing for 4 years, I would be in a much better position than my peers who would have been graduating in 4 years, even if I failed for the 4 years. And for me, I was just betting on myself, and it just feels reasonable. It felt, reasonable for me.
Yeah, well, philosophy business is the best school you can ever go to, right? It's a cliche, but it's often said that you learn more from failure. Even, I'm not saying you did fail, but had you failed?
No, I failed a lot.
But that would have been an institution in itself, right?
Yeah, 100%. But I failed a lot. Like the first year post kind of high school, I spent like at least the whole year just couch surfing. We were barely making money to scrape by. I moved home I moved back home for like 2 months, but I didn't actually tell them that I was actually moving back home. I just told them I was visiting. And then I just, yeah, but it was.
That sounds like an entrepreneur's. Every entrepreneur should have a background where you tell a story about, yeah, I was living on the largesse of others for a while.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no. So let's. So, what other talk about the next couple of stabs at entrepreneurship that you made? You had this sort of social ticketing application that didn't quite take off. What happened after that?
We had built out a. What did we tried building up a bunch of different stuff. One of the platforms we tried to work on was a YouTube for education. And the whole idea was I really believe in video education as a way of actually learning, because with videos you can rewatch the concept and until you actually understand it, versus in the real world where you just have what to call this, that in moment experience. And if you zone out for 3 seconds and you missed 3 seconds worth of content, and we all know people zone out for way longer than that.
3 seconds.
You could literally zone out the whole year and then just wake up and it's like exam. We tried building a YouTube for education. The whole idea is we didn't want to sell a subscription. We wanted to monetize through ads. So I guess we had launched it, after building it for 2-3 weeks, we had gotten over 1,000 people in the first week of launch. And we had found like independent content creators and put them onto the platform. But I think long term, we saw that the business was a lot more seasonal. And it didn't actually make sense to monetize through advertising. And it wouldn't be as big of a company. I think there's a lot of details that I'm missing in between that. But
it needed a lot of scale. Audience, that sounds like you're describing. You keep going into businesses that need a lot of scale economics, right? Because you know you need big audiences for all of these things, right? And it seems like that's not necessarily the direction you're going in now. Where I feel like there's a lesson you learned along from those first couple of attempts that if you want to become YouTube. That's hard for a young guy on his own to do. Talk about kind of what you learned from that and what it taught you about the next business you wanted to start.
I guess first it was probably just do more research. Because I guess the big issue was what to call this. Most students actually didn't care about school and they only cared when it actually mattered, which was during exams. So even though we had service live for a couple of months, we realized that we only got peak traffic during exams, and then most of the time people weren't using it. But also, I guess the financial models were more aspirational in the sense that I guess to achieve a certain amount of scale where ads are a feasible way to actually advertise or monetize, just didn't make sense. It wasn't scalable long term. You could have put it out as a free service, but monetizing through ads is probably not a smart. It's not a smart idea, especially for something that's so niche that people only want seasonally. So I guess there was a lot learned around financial modeling and actually thinking through that and actually asking, doing more proper user research.
Okay, so let's fast forward to what you're doing now. I mean, there's probably a few steps in between what you just told us about it today, but that's okay. So the core that I'm interested in talking about today, not just Fractional, but what Fractional kind of represents in terms of a strategy for startups and for all kinds of companies, but particularly for startups. The big problem, we talk a lot about, the lean startup, how startups can get a lot more done with less early, particularly in the early stages of a startup. So talk about how you came up with the idea for Fractional, which, is basic. I mean, we all know Fractional CMO, Fractional CFO. These are phrases that are used a lot. And I know people personally who do those things for a living. They work for 4 companies to equal 1, corporate salary, essentially, And or better, perhaps. And so that's a concept that has some traction and some visibility. But yeah. You're on the dev side with a similar concept. Talk about where the demand, what demand signals did you see? Kind of what was your read of the environment that told you this business is the right business to start now?
Okay, cool. So I guess after working with corporates for a while and getting to service them from a staff augmentation kind of model, mm-hmm. we realized that a lot of corporates are actually doing this and it makes sense, but not a lot of startups actually doing that. So just the whole concept of actually I can bring on a fractional worker or a fractional specialist to come onto my project for a set amount of hour every month or over a certain period of time and then let go of them when I need them is a concept that we see is not being done in the startup side as much as it could be. But I guess the biggest issue we're seeing is just, especially in Africa in general, is a lot of the build quality is pretty bad. And that's because a lot of the top talent actually gets saturated or gets scooped up by the large corporates, and then everyone is kind of left with whatever is left out. And that's simply because startups can't pay as much as the corporates. And we know that, I guess, Africa and maybe South Africa as well is a fairly oligopolistic type of market. So I guess the top payers are corporates. Right. So for us, it's we wanted to kind of solve the problem of how do we get these highly skilled engineers into kind of working with smaller startups that have potential for growth but might not have a crazy amount of budget to actually deliver on the project.
Hire that engineer, that skilled, that highly sought after engineer as a full-time employee, but maybe they can hire a portion of their time, correct?
Yes, exactly. Software projects are pretty, what you call this, they have life cycles, right? And they have phases. So you might need a certain skill set for a certain phase of the project development. And then post that phase and post that implementation, it might not make sense to keep that same skill set. And what we see happening so often is people trying to convert their current team into many different things, which I guess can work, but if they want a junior, then it doesn't really help a lot because now you've got a junior developer who's also a machine learning expert as well as a blockchain expert, but has no fundamentals of anything. And that's what results into, I guess, bad development.
Okay, fair enough. So couple of thoughts here. How do you think, now the conversation I've been having a lot lately, just sort of following the news and talking to people about it, writing about it, is kind of, you know, AI, I'm just going to bring an AI to the conversation, which, you know, I think I was telling you before we were recording, I was recently writing about the whole one person unicorn using AI automation to basically scale a business with one person, just a very few people versus dozens, you know. Now, we don't, every business doesn't have to be a unicorn. I think that's a silly idea, but every business does want to get bigger and scale, whatever scale means to that business. So how do you think about, particularly in an African context, how the combination of automation and fractionalization, et cetera, can, from a bigger picture standpoint, really help startups get off the ground? Now, you said it can help startups get access to higher quality engineering. That's one important point. But kind of what is your vision, I guess, for how your approach and then maybe adjacent things like, you know, using AI and et cetera, how all of that together sort of promises a better future for startups in Africa?
Yeah. AI, insane game changer. Essentially, I guess in programming, I guess the simple comparison is what AI is a Grammarly for coding. So you can write better, like with Grammarly, you can write better articles with better punctuation and better vocabulary.
And really use it, by the way, yeah.
Exactly. now apply that in coding context. Mm-hmm. And then now apply the whole kind of ChatGPT type of model where the code is actually writing itself, which is, mm-hmm. I think there's some people that don't want to believe that that's actually possible, but especially engineers, but it's like some of these advancements are crazy. And if you take it to its natural extreme, which is possible, it's you will get AI or AI that will be able to just write its own code, which is, but it will never really fully take away the human element of it, because people would need to be able to interface with AI, but the learning curve to be able to interface with AI is going to be reduced. So more people are actually going to be able to use AI and produce much better results. So, for example, a junior developer could, or somebody who would traditionally be a junior developer, would be able to code at a level of a senior engineer. And if you're making it ultimately that easier, you'd actually see more people actually coming in and gravitating towards software engineering. And then if you get that to happen, then you'll have better quality products being built, more startups being built, solving just a bunch of different things. And I think ultimately that kind of just leads to a much more, I guess, bright future, in a sense that you would have a diversity of thought when it comes to just the types of products that are being built. So, for example, right now, the reality is a lot of the startups that are also kind of being built in Africa, and in a lot of cases, it's built by expats, so just people traveling from other parts of the world, Europe, America, build startups here, or it's built by people that kind of come from the more affluent side of Africa, the ones that say Africa is not a jungle. And it's like, and it's not. It's not. But like, they get really offended and they forget that there's actually a large part of Africa that still is rural and still is township based. So once you kind of reduce the barrier to entry or barrier to access or understanding of building products and building applications, you get now more of the people that were previously disenfranchised or right now currently are disenfranchised, building up solutions to solve problems in their environment where the private school African person would not be able to appreciate or understand. So I and what those solutions are, I don't know. I don't come from a rich family myself, but like I went to really good schools. So I guess for a lot of my life, it's really just been in a bubble, so I can't, like, some of the solutions that are being built right now for like the township are stuff that I would never even think about and I'd never think about, because I'm not exposed to it as much.
You mean you think they're not good solutions, or that they're things that you wish you had thought about?
I wish I would have thought about, because they make these such good solutions, but I wouldn't have thought about them because I'm not exposed to it, right? So you do need some bit of exposure to be in it. And I grew up in Africa, South Africa, my whole life. And there's problems that people in rural areas and in townships that are, like, problems that they're facing that I can't relate to. So now imagine if they are building products and solutions to solve their own problems. So that's what we're going to actually see with AI. It's like... I guess you could be a 12-year-old and write a PhD level article using ChatGPT right now if you just know how to prompt it well. So now imagine apply that same context into programming.
What you're describing seems to have two sides. One side is, of course, the positive side, in that, you know, one person just using these tools can achieve what somebody wouldn't need either multiple people or much higher level of training and education to achieve, perhaps before AI and ChatGPT came along, et cetera. But isn't the flip side of that there's less incentive to get that education or that training and have that knowledge that's acquired from just application and learning versus typing prompts in? I'm wondering if we're going to have a future of startups with people who know how to write prompts but don't really understand the underlying technology.
Yeah, so there's going to be obviously opportunities for the ones that do to, I guess, earn more and to contribute towards writing. In fact, I don't even know, to be honest. I think I'm actually lying. I don't know.
It's okay.
Where it's building itself, and actually no one has to actually program it. So I don't know. But I guess the doomsday version of it is absolutely possible. I don't usually say this when I speak in government forums and stuff like that, but I guess this is more private. But
not a government. Okay.
Yeah, like to its logical extent, or its logical extreme, yeah, you get AI writing itself. People don't actually need to learn how to code. They can just prompt it and... Obviously, there's probably going to be an emergence of prompt engineers who actually know how to prompt it correctly. Right. So that might create a new field, but that supposedly might be... It could be a less amount than the current amount of developers, or it could actually be a larger amount because more people are going to see the benefits of building their own products. So more products are going to be built, so there's going to be more demand for people that have prompt engineering experience. And then I don't know what the 10th version or iteration of it is going to look like, but I guess that's going to determine the type of work that's going to occur. But ultimately, the doomsday part is the traditional roles will eventually cease to exist, but new roles will be created to cater for the increased demand in when it comes to software development in product development that came from the fact that you've democratized and reduced the barriers to access tenfold or thousandfold.
Right. Okay. So I want to wrap up. Just want to ask you a little more about Fractional. Now, from what I've looked at and studied, it seems like essentially a two-sided marketplace of, you know, the developers on one side and the corporates or the businesses that need the solutions. Is that how you see it? And have you thought about sort of the, because I've had others on who talk about building two-sided marketplaces, and the comment I've always heard is they're difficult to build, but once you've built them, they're very defensible. In other words, it's a great business model that is hard to achieve.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, how you've thought about that?
I love it. I love that it's hard. So yeah. I think it's good for me. I like. There's a quote that I really like. It says the quote is "the work works on you more than you work on it." So so because it's hard, I emerge a better person. So I like the idea of that. Yeah, like I was just telling you before, like I was just going through like a crazy week, but like now I'm the guy that can go through all of that and keep moving forward. So that's good. But yeah, building a two-sided marketplace is incredibly difficult because you have to manage the balance between supply and demand. Yeah, but because it's hard for me, it's probably going to be hard for everyone else that tries to do it. So.
Well, that's part of what I heard, which is once you have built it, it's easier. Nothing's easy, but it's a defensible business. In other words, once you've created a two-sided marketplace that's working and functioning, it's hard to disrupt, you know, someone else can come in and just take it from you, you know, because you've built something that has a moat around it, essentially. That is the argument for a two-sided marketplace. The argument against it is that they're hard to create, you know?
So we're trying to figure it out manually, and then we're saying, all right, how do we automate it? So right now, I guess the way we've been building our products and building out our feature set is kind of trying to solve some of our own internal problems and then build iteratively towards a solution that I guess makes the best sense for both sides of the party. So I guess Fractional as a platform is live currently, particularly for developers, but we haven't done a lot of work around the supply side where we kind of cater into startups. So a lot of that is still pretty much relationship based, where human, where there's a more of a human interaction, which I guess long term we want to keep that for as much as possible, because I guess you know when you use like these Fiverr and Upwork, and yeah. if a developer like screws you over, it's like, who do you run to, right? Maybe you could get them, you could try and get a return, but it's not as easy. They make it incredibly hard for you to actually get
money. You're that person. You're the person they go to.
With Fractional, yeah. We build the relationship with all of the customers that we have, and they come to us whenever there's any issues. If we place a developer and you aren't happy with the output, then we'd be able to replace the person at no extra cost. And with us, you get a more, a vetted engineer that fits your spec, but you don't have to take our word for it. You can also vet the engineer yourself to make sure that they deliver at the level that you want. But for us, we are trying to solve the engineering skills gap more at the intermediate to senior level. So most of the people on our database are intermediate to senior.
And are these people who are previous corporate employees and now they're looking to freelance? I mean, or is it young people who have developed skills but don't really have work experience yet? Talk about kind of your typical, on that side of the marketplace, kind of who your typical person is. You kind of just said a little bit, but
say yeah, it's previous corporate employees. There's actually a movement that's happening where a lot of people are actually opting, especially senior engineers, are actually opting to become more independent contractors. The benefit for them in that sense is that they get to pay less taxes, they get to have more product autonomy, and they get a diversity of projects. Pardon?
And you can work from the beach.
exactly, 100%. So a lot of senior guys feel like their career growth gets stunted by just getting stuck at a big bank and working on the same project for the past 3 years. And it's like, that's not exciting. And I'm pretty good and my skills are in demand. So what if I actually worked on like three different projects or maybe a project every 6 months, where it's like, it's a new challenge, a new opportunity. So we're seeing a lot of that. I have no reason to believe that that's going to slow down. I think, especially with AI, it's actually going to increase the amount of people actually becoming more independent type contractors.
Yeah. Do you think people will become independent contractors using AI to fulfill the work they've been hired to do, or at least do you think that's happening now?
100%. There's people that are doing that already, and I think some corporates are probably already doing it to small extent, or employees within corporates that are already just using ChatGPT to write some of their code. It is definitely going to happen. It is happening right now. But as the AI tools actually get better, the more you're going to see that happening.
Yeah. And is that something you have to vet for, police? Is that something you have to be aware of as the provider of that Fractional resource? Do you have to know, are you just using ChatGPT to do this, or are you doing it yourself? Does it matter from your perspective?
Well,
as long as the customer is happy with the result, I guess it doesn't, or does
it? The customer doesn't care what they use. It depends when. If the person's using AI to do a technical assessment, then that's wrong. That's obviously not good, because the technical assessment is what you're using to vet whether the person is, what to call this, is good or bad, junior or senior. And if they just are going to cheat ultimately by using AI to write code for them, then that's obviously not good. But with that being said, you can use AI to a certain extent. Like, you can't, like, if you could, like, going back to the Grammarly example, if you can't speak English, Grammarly can only help you so much.
I do my own writing. I mean, I don't use AI to write. I mean, I'm a little bit old school there, but I use tools like Grammarly to correct my mistakes along the way. I look at it as a not as a replacement for me. Now, it doesn't mean I couldn't use other tools, but That's how I do it.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know? And that's the same thing with like AI, right? It's more at this kind versions of AI are more assistive, but also they're more assistive for more junior intermediate guys. Senior guys actually don't want to use it. I'm not too sure why, but I guess a lot of the sentiment is that actually I'm actually faster if I just wrote the code by myself because I know what I want to write.
It's similar to, you know, I've been a writer for years and I probably have the same mentality. And
exactly.
So anyway, John, I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap this up. It's been a lot of fun chatting with you. You will be at the conference, the Big Five Summit, in Cape Town in March. We'll be running a panel kind of talking about some of these issues. We're really excited to have you there and to see you there. And we really thank you for your ongoing support for our conference. So, John, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Thanks for joining the Big 5D Podcast Summit Speaker Series, featuring conversations about issues important to SMEs in Africa with the thought leaders slated to appear at the 2024 Big 5 Summit in Cape Town. This episode was brought to you by the Big 5 Summit, Africa's leading small business technology event, which takes place 19-20 March in Cape Town. To get involved with this event, please write to us at info@big5digital.org. This podcast is a production of Big 5 Digital and is hosted and produced by me, Charles Laughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Big 5 Digital. Thanks again for joining us, and stay tuned for more great episodes.